everyone. That was pretty loud. Before we start, I actually have a bit of a confession to make. It feels a little bit weird standing up here on stage today talking about Node and JavaScript because, well, I haven't ever been the biggest fan of JavaScript. And, you know, it was great for some web applications and some client-side code and stuff like that, but I never really understood why anyone would ever want to use it on the server side. Back 2 years ago when I started playing around with Node, I just didn't get it. And so you can imagine my surprise when I learned about all of these companies, ranging from startups to large-scale enterprises, who were actually betting on JavaScript from anywhere from, you know, their web applications to their servers to their to mobile devices, and it made absolutely no sense to me. But I think 2 years now, 2 years later, I think I get it now. And so I'm going to try and share that with you all today. So why is Node so exciting? Other than being an incredible buzzword, you can just sprinkle it in anywhere and it makes things sound interesting. I think there are three different things when it comes to, when it comes to building an application that are important. So there's the speed. So how fast is your application going to run, right? You want low latency. And then you also have productivity. How quickly are you going to be able to develop your application? Can you spin up a prototype very quickly? And then the other piece is your application is going to evolve over time. Right? It's going to start from something that might be a small little prototype, but then over, and it might be some monolithic application, and then over time, you might start splitting that out into various microservices and everything like that. And so I'm going to speak to these three points next. And so why is on speed? Node is incredibly fast. And the key part of this is that it's asynchronous and non-blocking by default. Now, when I say this, especially to a .NET crowd, it's you know, you always think back to you know, C sharp, that has async await, right? What's the big deal? What's the big deal about Node? Why is this so important? And so I'm going to switch over into the demo right now, and just show you, this is going to be super simple, super quick overview, and it doesn't look like my machine is switching. There we go. And so we're going to go ahead and we're going to run Node in the command line. And you can say process dot, we're going to say fs dot read file. And so right now we're here in the REPL. And when I press tab, you're going to see, okay. Apparently my command prompt is also not working. Sorry guys, this is my dev machine. let's try that again. Okay. All right, so we get two different options, right? We get read file and we get read file sync. The synchronous version, that's the weird one, right? Node, from the beginning, decided that asynchronous was the way that everything is going to be. And the neat part about this is that that means every single library, every single package, every single framework that you're going to go ahead and download, that's, you can trust that it's going to be asynchronous unless it says otherwise. And so the entire ecosystem, you don't have to worry about checking whether things are going to meet your needs in that case. So now switching back, that was kind of a lame demo for something, so it was not worth the machine switch there. And there we go. And then the second piece is that it's built on Chrome's V8 engine. And putting aside our differences between V8 and Chakra and everything like that, the fact is at the time, V8 was the fastest JavaScript engine. And the reason, and the cool thing about JavaScript engines is that everyone here remember the browser wars and how much money all of these companies poured into that? And how much all these browsers started competing with each other, trying to shave off milliseconds off of every single request. All of that, Node gets to take advantage of all of that, all of those innovations, all of those improvements, all of that. And and it's also been tested in so many real-world scenarios, right? Like, when you look at some of the benchmarks for JavaScript engines, right? They compare them up against basically real-world sites, like, okay, like let me try and compile in TypeScript, for instance, or some cool graphics site. And so they've been battle-tested for actually far longer than Node itself has been around. And then lastly, it's, you know, Node has a very lightweight and optimized core, and that's really part of Node's philosophy. There are about 40 built-in modules, and they're super simple, but they're not restrictive, and they give you enough to build on that. Now, the next piece is it's super easy and quick to get an app up and running. I don't know, how many people here did the Node Code Challenge here? Few, okay. One hand. Well, we have a Node and Visual Studio Code Challenge, and we actually have this bobblehead app generator that you can go and build, and we'll show you a little bit more later on. But the neat thing is there are 250,000 packages in NPM's repository. NPM is Node's package manager. 250,000 tools and frameworks and all of that stuff all at your disposal. The Node community and NPM are absolutely incredible. And then the reason for that is like, man, how did they get that many packages? Is that Node has this modularity that's sort of ingrained. It's very quick. Every single project that you create, right, when you're going, is going to be a NPM package that you can go ahead and upload to the repository. And so because it's so easy, people do it more often, and that just fuels the ecosystem there. And lastly, you get to develop how you want, right? JavaScript isn't the best language, but it's super flexible, right? You can do anything you want to do at any given point, and it's scary. And if you want a little bit more if you want a little bit more process to that, not process, but robustness, that's the word, robustness to that, then you can use TypeScript and you can get static typing. You can move from monolithic services to microservices-based architectures. You can move seamlessly between the client and server, build isomorphic JavaScript applications. And so you have all of this, you basically get to choose where you want to land in that pipeline, and every single application goes through a different workflow and process, and Node helps support with that. So that's why Node is exciting. But the question is, like, so Node is great, everyone is using it, but why is Microsoft so excited about Node? And the fact is, and I know it might be hard to hear this, but it's not us, it's you. You're building absolutely incredible applications with Node. And we want to help support you in those efforts. And we think we can. But whenever I say that, everyone gets really skeptical. And usually the response is something like this. Hey, Microsoft, if Node is so important to you, why don't you fix this? And usually one of three things follow. The first thing that typically follows is, hey, Microsoft, why don't you fix MaxPath? And with NPM v3, there are a couple efforts that we've actually, both us and NPM and the Node community has been pushing towards. First is NPM v3, and that now installs dependencies as maximally flat. Now, for the uninitiated with MaxPath and Node and NPM, what would happen is that when you NPM install a dependency, it would also go ahead and grab all of its sub-dependencies as well. Now, in order to avoid the whole DLL hell complex and everything like that, it would nest those dependencies. Now, the problem is that nest can get very, very long. And it turns out that some time ago, we decided that 260 characters was an appropriate choice, that no one would ever go beyond that. Turns out we were wrong, but the good news is that it's not actually a file system limitation. It's always just been a Windows API limitation. Now, that has some various quirks and things to actually fix that, but what NPM has done now is they've released version 3, which lets you install dependencies as maximally flat, which means that unless there's actually a versioning conflict, it's pulled up to the top level. And so that's made things a whole lot easier. And then secondly, we've actually, there's been some pull requests that have gone into .NET Core. .NET Core now supports long file paths. And so we're working on it and we're also chatting with the Windows team, but I don't like to promise anything because we've put out blog posts in the past where we've done that before, and apparently is more complicated than we thought. But luckily, there's progress. So the next piece. Hey, Microsoft, why don't you fix native modules on Windows? So here's a fun thread. Windows users are not happy. It's on the Node-JIP thread, and basically, the title was a little bit broad, and so it sort of turned into a thread for everyone who was generally unhappy and happened to be on Windows. So, the core crux of the issue here, though, was native modules. Is that when you end up injecting a bunch of C++ into your JavaScript, and it turns out JavaScript devs don't like dealing with C++ compiler, cryptic compiler errors, and it was just plain confusing. And so people weren't sure whether there was a configuration issue or whether there was something wrong with the module. And then there are always issues between Node and NPM having different versions. So that always is complicated in general. But the fact that Windows didn't ship with a Visual C++ compiler, or that you had to install a full-blown version of Visual Studio in order to actually compile any C++, that didn't make anyone any happier. And so the good news is that we have actually, we're releasing the Visual C++ build tools. I know it says preview there, but it actually got released just now. And we are consolidating, and we are updating the install instructions for Node and everything like that. And so now people don't have to go ahead and install full-blown Visual Studio in order to use native modules on Node or really any other platform. So now NPM install will just work appropriately. And it's just a minimal set of the Windows SDKs plus some of the Visual Studio, plus the C++ compiler bits. So number 3, hey, Microsoft, why don't you fix the Windows CLI? And you know, we've asked for your feedback on user voice, and we've asked, and this isn't a surprise to anyone here who's been at Build. A couple of the issues were with the Windows CLI, but mostly people just really wanted to be using Bash. So We do have now the new preview of that experience, and it's pretty it's in preview. It's in preview for a reason. There are things that aren't working, and it's unclear exactly how we're going to go with that, how much further we're or how that is going to affect things or maybe percolate through an ecosystem or anything like that. So there are uncertainties there, but we're making steps, right? This is a step in the right direction. We're not there yet, but I'm super excited about where we're headed with all of this. And so I hope that all convinces you now that we are listening, that we are trying to address these issues. And we do want you to be as productive as possible with Node. This is a serious commitment for us. And along that line, we want to try and bring the magic of Visual Studio to your workflow. One of the challenges with Node, and really with JavaScript as well, is dealing with the dynamically typed language, you know, debugging, IntelliSense, all of that stuff. Turns out to be really hard. And so in order to help with that, we have two different products, right? So we have Visual Studio Code, and that's our free open source cross-platform editor that it has Node debugging, it has IntelliSense, and it's actually built on Node. So when we're developing, right, we're actually developing it using Node, and so that means that we're getting that much more testing on it. And so it was really built for Node from the start, and that's something that's really exciting about it. Then the next piece is Node Tools for Visual Studio. And today marks like our 1 year anniversary for 1.0. So that's pretty exciting. And it's a free open source extension that turns Visual Studio into a Node IDE. So all of the debugging, the IntelliSense, all of the profiling tools, those are all built in. And you can use those for Node. And so definitely urge you to check that out. Now that's enough slides. Let's get on to some demos. We've been talking a lot about bots lately. And so we're going to build a Twitter bot. And so we're going to switch over into Visual Studio Code. Now I know to hit the space bar. All right. And, oh, sorry. So we're going cd into cd source demo build. And right from the command line, we're going to launch Visual Studio Code. So I have my project up and running. And you can see that I've already started on the Twitter bot. Now, what's the bot going to do? Whenever someone, it's going to follow someone. And whenever that person posts a tweet, the bot is going to reply with a message to that person. And you can see that we've commented out the sentience over here. And actually, let me change up the font size here, since I think that's a little bit too small. So you get to see a different demo. User settings, and let's make that better. Okay. And so we've actually commented out the sentience here so that we make sure that our bot doesn't go rogue. We want it to be a very positive bot. And the first thing that's going to happen is that we're going to go ahead and get the username that we want to reply to. And we're going to listen to every single time that a tweet is made on that username's behalf. In that case, it's the username is thatguid. And we're also going to upload we're going to reply with a tweet, and we're going to do one extra step. We're going to make the tweet fun, right? You know, tweets with photos get more retweets and everything like that. And we're going to give it a Satya bobblehead, and using the bobblehead generator application. And we're also going to update, and then we're going to send the update with the status and the media that we just uploaded. So before we get through all of that, let's take a look a little bit at our environment, because I said that we're trying to make you productive here. And one of the things you'll notice is that, actually, that wasn't supposed to work this time. Let's try that again. I'm trying to show you how to get to that point. Okay. Well, so the reason that it appears to be working is that, that's what happened. So I already downloaded, we're providing IntelliSense, and it's actually based off of the TypeScript compiler. Because JavaScript is TypeScript, so we can actually use that to be more smarter about analyzing your code. And so you'll see, you know, one of the things that we can do is we can say var string, and can say str dot, and we know that we can infer that str is a string, and we're giving you all the completions on string. Okay, now that's pretty basic. But one of the things that we also just added was support for JS doc. And so you can say, okay, well, I'm going to have a function called multiply, and multiply is going to take an a and b, and we're going to return a times b. And just to make things a little bit easier, I downloaded an extension that adds dot comments for me. And I got here using control shift p. And then I can say create dot comments, and it's gone ahead and created some. Now, without these comments, you'll see that when I hover over A, it's an unknown type. When I hover over B, it's an unknown type. But then as soon as I add these, and then I can specify that A is a number, B is a number, and we can also specify a return here, you know that it's returning a number. And so now when I go ahead and I use multiply, I'm getting hints that tell me all of this stuff, so I know exactly what to fill in there. And JS doc is actually doing pretty. It's you see it in a lot of the packages that are in the ecosystem. So this definitely helps. Now the other thing that we have is these type. If you notice, we have these DTS files. They're TypeScript definition files, and typically they were only being used for TypeScript, but really it's a bunch of metadata that the user, that the community has contributed in order to help you in order to help people use the packages and everything, use the packages that are available via NPM, so some of the most popular libraries and packages out there. And so whenever you install something, you know, in this case, what I did was when I npm install, typings install a node, and that's how we were able to get the typings file that provided completions on some of the global node configuration pieces there. Now, once you have your environment set up with regard to IntelliSense, we can simply F5 and start debugging through the code. Now, the first thing that's going to happen is that we're going to try and start listening to this username. And we'll see. Sorry, I set the breakpoint in the wrong place. Let's restart that. So we're going to start debugging, and we can step through the code, and you can see that just as you're used to, we have all of the tooltips and everything that are available for you, and then you also are able to browse through the local variables, the global variables, and everything like that, and as well as see the call stack. And so similar to just in Visual Studio, you can keep pressing F10. And so now we're at the end of the application because we haven't actually tweeted anything. So let's go ahead. We'll set a breakpoint so we end up over once a tweet has been created. And I'm going to go ahead and tweet. And as you can see, I was kind of using this as a bit of a REPL window. And we're going to tweet with hello build. And I think Twitter will not like me if I repeat it multiple times. So we add some exclamation points. And we can go ahead and step through. So same exact experience that you're used to in Visual Studio, but now you have in a cross-platform environment for Node. Now, that's pretty cool. Sorry, I should actually probably step through the full. You want to see something working. Let's try that. Okay. So we should be able to, we can listen on, okay, so we got a success. And so now I should have received a notification. And we have our Satya bobblehead over here that we've been replied to with a nice, friendly message, an inspiring message. The other thing that Visual Studio Code allows you to do is it makes it really easy to actually navigate between your code. And so in this case, you know, I have the inspiring tweet, in this, we're getting, you know, tweet contents over here. And so I can F12 into that and be brought straight to it. In this case, I already added some js.comments. And then I also really like this feature where you can shift F12 and then be able to jump between everything. So all of this makes it easier, especially in the JavaScript world, to be navigating and you know, even refactoring your code, right? So if I press F2, then you know, I can say get tweet instead. And so that's going to be carried forward everywhere else as well. Now, one thing that people do with with when they're writing Node applications is that they use something called NodeMon quite a bit. And NodeMon is effectively a file system watcher. And what's nice about it is that I can point NodeMon at my application and have it run. But then whenever I change something in the file itself, right? So let's say maybe I want to add a console.log over here. Then that's actually going to be restarted and automatically pulled through. Now, one of the challenges with this has historically been that one of the challenges with this has been that whenever you do this, you also have to keep reattaching your debugger as well. And so in the latest versions of Visual Studio Code, we actually help address some of these challenges. So over here, we have, you know, we have two different launch configurations. We have a launch and we have a attach configuration. And under attach, you can see that we can actually specify whether we want to restart our debugging session. So if I change that value to true, and then I go over here and I say NodeMon debug break, and I give it my application, then it's going to start Node. And then now I use debug break so that it's going to wait for me to attach. And then I'll attach the server that's running. And now we've stopped at the first line. And we can continue. And we'll remove these breakpoints for now. But actually, we'll leave one of them here. And then if we change, you know, this to be hello world, then it's going to automatically restart the debugger and reattach for us without me having to go switch back into the command line or anything like that. So that makes it much easier for you to work with your applications and without having to keep switching contexts all the time. So the next piece, kind of moving on, that we have is grunt and gulp and task runner support. So when with all of this tooling, we never want to limit you in any way, right? We don't want to throw you into the sea of abstractions. We want you to be able to use all of the tools that you know and love, from grunt to gulp to ESLint and everything like that, throughout your workflow. And so Visual Studio Code actually has really well-ingrained support for all of this. And so what you can do is we have our gulp file over here, and we can press Control-Shift-B. And because I haven't actually configured it with... that was a whole... It's looking for our build task over here, it means that it's all there in your experience. And then you can also go ahead and we're going to actually switch out from this demo because we're getting low on time. But you can see how all this task runner support is just integrated into your full workflow. So moving on, we have Visual Studio as well, and we've introduced a lot of really cool improvements here too. And so one of the things that you'll notice is that there's no project system on the right-hand side over here. And that's something new in the Dev 15, in the Visual Studio 15 preview. And we've also added support for debugging here. So we can go ahead and we can press F5. And go through and run through the same demo. Now, this is all the experience that you're used to, and you can actually, but you don't have to create a whole separate project file in order to do it. You can simply go to File, Open, Folder now in Visual Studio. Or alternatively, there's also a shortcut in File Explorer itself. So that makes things a whole lot easier to actually get started with any sort of application that you have and get started debugging. Now, the experience is not quite there yet. It's alpha for a reason. Because you know, right now we're not actually getting any sort of IntelliSense. But in Visual Studio itself, we've been rehauling our IntelliSense experience. And partly to address some of the, we've been rehauling our IntelliSense experience to be more consistent across Visual Studio itself and also across Visual Studio Code. And so the same typings and everything like that, that's all being picked up. And we're actually going one step further, so I can delete this typings folder. And I'll open up the folder in File Explorer, and I'll unload the project just so you can see everything get deleted. And I'll delete this typings folder, and then I'm going to reopen it and reload the project. And what you'll notice is that, they were still in the project file, but we can delete that. Is that we don't actually have any more typings available. And so now but I'm still getting completions. And so what's cool is we're actually doing all of this stuff in the background for you. And that's really where we're trying to go. We want to make sure that you don't have to keep switching between the command line and Visual Studio and everything like that in order to work with your project. And then we also get some of, and then it's also a whole lot more performant than it used to be before, because we're relying on some of the community's contributions there. And of course, it's Visual Studio, so you get all of the tools you know and love. We have, you can launch profiling on your application, and you can see all the different packages that you have installed and everything like that. All of this new language service and the open file, open folder experience, that's all available in the 1.2.2 alpha. So let's switch back over here to our slides briefly. So I'm going to skip through these. And in addition to some of the tooling that we have, there are also platform services all across Azure, ranging from some of the cool functions stuff that you have that are all available for Node. Or to Application Insights. And this is not stuff that's limited to the particular platform that you're working on or anything like that. These are services that you can use regardless of what platform you're running on. Now, the last demo that we have is time travel debugging. And this is where things get pretty fun. Time travel debugging is really interesting. It's actually not a new concept. It's something that there's been research on for 30 years or so. But the problem has always been that when you want to try and implement something like this, the key thing that you need to do is capture state at various different checkpoints. And the problem has been that capturing the state is a very expensive operation because you have all sorts of processes that aren't necessarily reproducible very easily. Things like math.random and things like that. Now, time travel debugging, what we've done is we've been using some research from MSR. And the idea is that the runtime is doing a bunch of work, right? The runtime is doing a bunch of work, and let's try and piggyback on all of that work that it's already doing in order to help minimize the amount of work that we need to do at each of these individual checkpoints. And so, for instance, one example is if the runtime says that, hey, something has been garbage collected, right? At that point, we can go ahead and say, okay, well, things have been garbage collected. Now it's probably a pretty good time to take a checkpoint. And so what we've done is instrumented the Node Chakra runtime in order to provide this experience. And so this entire concept is actually very broadly applicable. It's applicable to any sort of runtime. I think .NET's been instrumented with it. So the concept itself can really be taken anywhere. But we're starting with this because it was the easiest place to start with. And also, Node has a bunch of different issues with asynchronous debugging and callbacks and everything like that that generally make things more challenging to debug. Now, one of the I'm going to go ahead and show you some of the work that we've done there. And keep in mind that this is all a prototype. This is just sort of a preview of some of the ways that we're thinking about things and some of the ways that we're trying to improve our tooling in order to help with these problems. And so over here, I actually have just a basic Hello World application. And I'm going to go into build demo, and actually build demo node. There we go. I'm We're going to open it up over here. So this is just a prototype version that we've been messing around with. It's not available or anything like that. We're just trying to test the concept and play around with things. And so it's very simple. And what you'll see is that now when I press F5, we're stopping at the breakpoint, and there's actually a little bit more to it than that. You'll notice that there's now a new step back button available. And so all of those times when you ride right past your breakpoint, we're hoping this can make things a whole lot easier for you there. And so now we can go ahead and we can step back, and we can see that A is no longer 5, it's actually 3. So we can zoom in over here. So you can see that A is actually 3. And we can keep stepping back. And we can see that A is now undefined. And one of the neat things about this is that this is a very simple example, right? But let's go ahead and take a look at our the original Twitter app that we had created. So we have step back, and that's pretty neat. But let's go ahead and look at build. And actually, so it looks like it opened in the previous. And you see this app is very familiar. Now, we're going to go ahead, and you can imagine that one challenge is that if you're running in production and something goes wrong, it's always really hard to actually detect this. So wouldn't it be cool if we could use this time travel debugging to figure out the state that you were actually in before some problem went wrong? So we're going to switch into the D drive. I have these on separate drives. And we're going to switch into build. And node.exe. And we're going to pass in an extra flag, ttRecord. And we're going to say record to node debug, which is a folder that I have. And we're going to run it with app.server.js. And so now we can see, but this time when we go and tweet, we should receive a response soon. Okay, success. And we should be able to get a notification, but it actually returned undefined instead. So let's go ahead and figure out what exactly was going wrong with our code there, such that it gave us the totally wrong message. And so we're going to flip back over here, and I have it's already hooked up to look at that folder. And we're going to set a breakpoint at around where the message is being created. And now we're going to press F5. Oh, my bad. I used the wrong. There we go. So now, when I press F5, we should go ahead and hit our debugger breakpoint. And so here we are, and this is actually, we recorded Node, so this would be something that you'd have running on a production server or something like that. And now we're also able to step back and see what went wrong. And you can see that if we go back a little bit, the first time what's happening is it's actually loading up the checkpoint. So it takes a little bit longer the first time, but after that everything gets cached. And you can see that the message was undefined, but then index kind of has a weird value to it. And so, it turns out, that what was happening was that our index, it looks like, was, you know, it's telling us it's undefined. And it looks like we were just throwing in the wrong. It looks like we were throwing in the. Okay. So that didn't seem to. To work, but the issue was that we weren't using math.floor in order to get our value here, and so therefore our index for the tweet was actually a bit off. But we should be able to try that again, and then it would work. So, one of the cool things about time travel debugging is that it's actually more broadly applicable than just just being able to step back and everything like that. The core innovation here is that you're able to now record all of this additional state with just less than 20% of the process overhead. And so you can imagine all sorts of other scenarios where this might actually be applicable. And so this is just one thing that we're exploring. We're still not quite there yet, but we'd really like to see what you think and hear your thoughts on all of that, and see exactly where you think that we should be applying some of these changes. Now, before we wrap up, there's one more thing, and I'm gonna switch to this. So Scott Hanselman, I ran into him today, and he was feeling a little bit down. He had a great time at Build, but. I found him, kind of passed out over near the podcasting booth. And so let's try and cheer him up a little bit. And we're going to, I think he's getting on a plane right now or something like that. So let's provide him with inspiration from our Twitter bot to him. And so, and we'll, you know what, we'll even personalize it a little bit. So, oh, thanks. And we'll even personalize it a little bit. Created a bobblehead for Scott himself. And we're going to just go ahead into our application, and instead of that GUID, we're going to change it to S. Hanselman. And I think, let's just double check that that's his, okay. And the next thing that we have is we have our, and so we have our tweet, and instead of Satya Bobble, we're going to send him a feel better Bobble, and we're also going to say Scott here. And let's just verify that getTweet is saying everything that we want. Excellent. So the next thing that we're going to do is we're going to run node app.js from the command prompt, and we're going to switch back into Twitter, and let's see. I don't know when the last time he tweeted was, but okay. So let's just leave this up, and if he tweets during the session, then that's going to be great. If not, then we'll see. So let's see. Flipping back to the slides. And if anyone wants to keep refreshing, then that would be helpful. If it happens, then. So we have a few resources to help you get started. So we went over, you know, why Node is exciting. We went through some of the cool tooling that we're building for Visual Studio and Visual Studio Code, as well as some of the super experimental new features that we're experimenting with right now. We have a and so if you want to learn how to create the bobblehead app and start playing around with all these tools, then I urge you to visit aka.ms/bobbleheadapp. And you can also check out all of these amazing resources. Okay. So Hanselman tweeted, and excellent. So hopefully he'll appreciate that. And so you can go ahead, you can check out all of our tooling over here. I didn't include the link, the GitHub links, but everything is also on GitHub, and that's where you're going to get some of our latest features and everything like that. The demo is available there, and so you can also find me on Twitter. I'm Mousetraps pretty much on Twitter, on GitHub, anywhere else. I'm sorry the demos didn't really work out as well as expected. If you want, you can come chat with me after the. After the talk, I'll definitely show you them in person. It's always tough when you're demoing these experimental features. And I also urge you to check out these other talks. I know that everyone's here, but this is for everyone who's online, and this is the last session. So lastly, whether you have comments, compliments, or complaints, we'd love to hear your feedback, especially if it happens to come in the form of a pull request, but an evaluation form will do too. Thanks.